Hi, my name is Jeff Pagano, and thanks for tuning in to the Harpin' on Rugby podcast. HarpinOnRugby.net is an unofficial fan site for Leinster and Ireland rugby, with write-ups every Monday after matches, and regular coverage of the latest news and opinion via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and of course this pod. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, as well as a host of other platforms. Well, you don't need me to remind you that last weekend didn't exactly go to plan for Leinster fans, and joining me on the pod this week to find the positives is Neil Keiko Keegan, who shared some thoughts from his own write-up, which can be found over at thecouchpunditireland.com. We also discuss whether or not Leinster's season as a whole was defined by this result, as well as a brief look ahead to the rest of the Champions Cup, as well as the Six Nations. So without any further ado, here's how we got on. Now it's time for our back and forward chat, and joining me this week to pour over last Saturday and the season as a whole is longtime Leinster fan and Harpin contributor, earning his 10th cap on the pod, our first to hit double figures, by the way. A warm welcome to Mr. Neil Keiko Keegan. How's everything with you, sir?
Good evening. It is all good. As I was saying before we went on, I am still emotionally drained from the weekend, so it is good to talk to you.
Indeed. We've a lot to get through, that's for sure. We actually last spoke about rugby here on the pod back in mid-May, I discovered. So that was about 50 years ago, right, with all that's been going on.
Oh, wow.
So one of my many different ways of filling the COVID void was talking about rugby jersey. And that was our last, but that wasn't our last podcast chat, was it?
No, absolutely not. We've branched out. We kind of realized we also, outside of the rugby, we have a mutual interest in happenings across the water in terms of politics. So we do that we record usually every Thursday, it pops out, every Thursday it pops out. And you remind me, we're on episode 12 now, aren't we?
Going to be 13 this week. Lucky 13.
13 this week. Wow.
It's it's a show we call it What's the Story with USA 2020. We're just basically talking about the build up to the all the craziness that's building up to the American presidential election. So I'll leave a link to that in the program notes, and if anyone wants to check that out. But anyway, listen, back to we can't put this off any longer. We had a stinker of a day on Saturday. I got it all off my chest and myself and my write-up this week. So I think I'm ready to hear someone else talk about it. So I'll give you the floor, Mr. Keegan, and let's see what you have to say about your reactions on Saturday.
Yeah, it seems to be, I finished my post there on thecouchpunditireland.com, if you don't mind the plug. I finished that this week with the definition of insanity, which Einstein says, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And that's how I finished the post, because I feel as I was watching it, we were committing insane acts of repetitive behavior, expecting different results. We kind of started very passively. Now, okay, in the very beginning, there's a mistake from, you know, again, I hate mentioning players' names, so I'll try and not do that. I don't think that's right, especially, you know, when you look at how people are reacting to the Ulster game. I don't think it's right to mention names. But anyway, a mistake that would happen once every 500 games happens in the opening seconds of this game. And that sends a wobble through the team. Now, you know, similar to the Connacht Grand Final in the Pro 14 a few years ago, there was quite a lot of passive physics. Is that the word? Yeah. They were very passive in the opening few minutes, which allowed Saris to just have their way. And I compared it to when I'm doing Thai boxing. If I show any sort of hesitation, any sort of second guessing myself, my opponent's going to go in and go in for the kill. And Saracens, love them or hate them, are beyond fantastic at sensing weakness. And as soon as they did that, they just started strangling Leinster. And it was tough to, because if you look at the numbers of the game, I know numbers don't always tell the story, but if you look at just start with the numbers, right? I'll just read this paragraph out very quickly. So, the game was tighter than hipster skinny jeans. That's a funny line to start. But Leinster ran for 152 more meters at 276 meters. Now, that's the third lowest amount of distance run in the last 2 years. So that just shows. And then we've had, if you remember, we have games in the snow in the middle of November where there's been more meters run. Leinster had 63 possession for 66% territory, missing only 3 of 85 tackles, only called into action 85 times. So if you're looking at that, you go, that's not a bad return against Saracens. Saracens missed 17 of 204. Now, the big issue again, we'll talk about scrums and stuff, but in general, the big issue since coming back from lockdown with Leinster is the penalties. Only been in single figures once. And this was 15, eight of which were in the scrum time. Now they did push 10 out of Saracens, which is, I think, is a good return against Saracens. But this is my favourite stat. Now we can jump on this if you like. So Leinster had 11 players in double figures for meters run. Saracens only had 4, but Leinster had no one in double figures for tackles made. Saracens had 10. So even though we weren't called into action a lot, nobody made that double figures. And if you think about the numbers over the last few years, I know numbers don't win things. It just gives you an idea of how it went. There's people like Conan making 15 tackles and all this sort of stuff. And then Itoje made 19, missed 3. And there was a huge amount of them, especially in that pack, obviously, who are in the high double figures, and we had no answer for it.
Yeah, the before the kickoff. Now, I've had a lot to say about the BT Sport commentary, or sometimes lack thereof. Yeah. But there was one bit, and it was Brian O'Driscoll before the game made a good point. He said the one thing that Saris may want to do is mirror our style of play, give us a taste of our own medicine, because the theory is if we're doing it, then we know that that's what gets results. So that might be something that would work on us. And this tendency of giving us the ball, giving us the ball back, box kicking, aggressively kick chasing, all these things that Saracens, a lot of the things that Saracens were doing was stuff that we wouldn't be inclined to do. And they were happy for us to have the ball and just tackle us into like there was no tomorrow. And it's almost like we were facing, I mean, we heard all these stories about Owen Farrell playing the part of Johnny Sexton in their training sessions. Well, it looks like a few other players did a bit of role play as well. And they were able to mimic the whole Leinster team because they had us to a T. I mean, it was a game plan specifically designed to get us. And when, you know, as everyone knows, they've had no other game to really prepare for since God knows when. So, we had a lot of tackles to make, they had a lot of tackles to make, but that's how they wanted it, and they were well set, and we just couldn't cope with it.
Absolutely, and if you look at the execution of things, like every single box kick was in that kind of, all of us in blue shirts were putting our heads in our hands when we saw the ball in the air. It was the beautiful kind of 4.5 seconds in the air. It's not going to touch the 22, so we have to challenge for it. And interestingly, you know, again, going in, we're thinking, right, they're going to aim at Larmer. It kind of tells its own story. And they went straight at James Lowe. And that would have been something that, you know, maybe Leinster wouldn't have even thought about either, you know. So, like, I think the game was the game. I think the bigger issue, for me, is obviously the reaction online is going to be what it's going to be. It's fans versus supporters. It's, you know, everything has gone mad. Let's set the RDS on fire. When in reality, you know, it's not a skill issue. People talk about size issues and things like that. Whereas if you look in the second half, there was definitely 3, maybe 4 times where Ryan rolled over to Tolgi and made a point to do it when sometimes the pass was the better option there. But at that point, the aggression was in and they had to get back into that mind frame, which was really important. Now, they should have started that way. So I think that's the issue in the green jersey and in the blue jersey, where there's a lot of, I call it a team-based combat sport, which annoys people. But you can't have a contact sport without wanting to commit to a contact, without wanting to push someone back. And that's going to take a combative effort, a force. And if you're not, and not that they're not willing to do it, but if you don't start with the intensity that they started the second half with, that the mountain is going to be too high to climb. Like, you know, Northampton, I think everyone keeps going back to the Northampton game, where obviously Northampton had the first half of their lives, and Leinster again were a little bit off the run, off the pace, and then something happened at halftime. Now, we can't depend on that. That can't be depended on. That's the once, twice in a lifetime thing. That's Istanbul for Liverpool. Every team has one of these things, but we can't depend on that. And we saw when the aggression is up from Leinster that they can do the job. And that's going to be what's the biggest pain for the team, for the squad, for the coaches, because they've got to answer questions now about Leinster is just too small. The way they play is never going to beat Saracen. It's the same for Ireland, when in reality, it's all about what's between the ears. That's the insanity quote. That's where that came from. It's all about what's between the ears, because skill for skill, man for man, there isn't enough of a difference to quantify that first half.
Yeah. And I suppose, since we're both Leinster fans, I suppose we this is kind of a safe space where we can explore questions like this. I mean, is there any mitigation for Leinster? I mean, could you say like, you know, the COVID break affected everyone, but we had four games since then against just two provinces, three of them with the same ref. Like, it wasn't any kind of preparation. Of course, Leinster should always be up for these quarterfinals, and I know that, and it's an intensity, but was that really the right preparation for us for this game? I mean, did we, now, of course, Saris didn't really prepare anything at all, but even if it isn't that, was there something, were there other factors as well, or was it just all on our parts that we weren't good enough on the day?
I think part of it is, you know, not good enough on the day, and that happens in sport at every level, and that's wins and losses happen. But I think that if we step back, we're getting further and further away from the game, which I think is important for our mental health. Mm-hmm. But I think that when you look at what it was and what it is, what it was a bad day at the office, compounded by uncharacteristic mistakes, which started from the first 3 seconds of the game. Second half was more positive. It came back in. Now, talking about referees and all that sort of stuff in terms of Saturday, it does make me sound like a sore loser, but there are questions to be asked there. Now, whether that affects the outcome, separate issue. But if you look at how the Ulster match was officiated, it was very, very different. But aside from that, I don't think it's as bad as we think it is. When you look at that season, you look at those 25 games, and you look at the competition in the squad, and you look at the two teams that were fielded throughout that season, it can't be seen as anything but a success. Now, people are going to rag on the Pro 14. I tried watching a game in the top 14 last weekend. I can't remember who was now, to be honest. I turned it off 15 minutes in. It was rubbish. And you get, you know, the standard isn't what we think based on Saracens on Saturday in the Premiership. There's a massive gap there as well. So I think the way Leinster worked the Pro 14 is great. Guys like Hugo Keenan, all these guys are getting game time and getting big game time, which is great for all jerseys. It's great for blue, great for green. I don't think a huge amount needs to change. I think the only thing, and again, this is me, I'm sitting on the couch, I know nothing about nothing. I think the only problem in the blue jersey is between the ears. I think if they arrive in the first half with the same intensity, anger, aggression, as well as the skill that they had in the second half, that game is a very, very different game. Like, you look at what Leinster are providing and what they're doing, it's absolutely amazing what's been built there. And that can't be washed away. It's just between the ears.
And we can't ignore the fact that they did come back. And they got within 5 points. And I was thinking that second try we went in, we were on a roll. And I felt we really thought we could win this game because it was 62, 63 minutes. But then literally from that restart, you talk about the opening kickoff. I think, and a lot of people talk about the scrums. I think they were hitting us at restarts. A lot more, just as much. They were targeting that area. And this was one where we just completely fell asleep. What happened in that first one, you didn't want to name names, and you're right. And it wasn't so much one player even. The guy who dropped it, they set up for one of the big locks to catch that restart. Yeah. And with the way the wind was, they just totally misjudged it. They were set for the guy we won't mention to go up in the air to catch it, but it was never getting to him, and it went over his head, and your man knocked it on. And this happened again in the second half. We got two tries. We got back within 5 points, definitely within striking distance. Could have definitely gotten a third try on the day. But just at the kickoff, again, they misjudged it. It was supposed to go, I think it was James Ryan this time. He was ready to jump. And when everyone else saw he was ready to jump, no one else was looking at the ball. It sailed over his head. Your man comes in, catches it on the full. I don't even think he needed to jump. That's when the game was over for me. Like, we just weren't ready. That's the last moment that you didn't want to fall asleep, you know, and it just didn't happen from there. But that said, we did well to come back at least, and we gave them something to think about in those closing stages.
Oh, absolutely. I put a comment up that as the comeback was happening, you could see Saracen's heads dropping. You could see if there was a crowd there, the first three rows would need an ambulance due to oxygen deprivation. They were sucking so much air. They were struggling. And it was Atoji's catch off McGrath that really dented everything. Now, okay, look, watch it again. That's all I'm saying. He's but it doesn't matter now. And again, just in terms of the scrums, if anyone's watching again, you watch the loose head. He almost turns 40 degrees to his left and pushes in on Nugget when he's on. And that makes it, what is it, 3-on-2 at that stage. And that's why everything turns around. So it's you know, and if we can see it on the TV and they can see it on the truck, then it should be called similar to the sighting that's come out due to our man of the match, player of the match. But again, as we're talking, we're seeing that it wasn't the end of days. It wasn't doomsday. Everything is not broken here. There's just lessons that need to be learned, and we do need to start learning this lesson. It's a bit like you know, the Edinburgh game against Ulster broke them mentally, emotionally, physically, in every kind of way. We can't allow a team to build up this kind of confidence anytime they see a blue jersey. It's like when Ireland were rocking and rolling. No other international side wanted to see a green jersey. Even walking down the street, they didn't want to see one. And every other team, bar Saracens, have that with the blue jersey. We need to get another shot. And I think it's great the Pro 14 is coming back very soon. The problem is we won't get a shot at Saracens for at least 2 years. And that's going to be the thing. But I do think that it's not as bad as it was. That there's some lazy commentary about size of players, which... Look, New Zealand are getting smaller. The only thing that's getting bigger in New Zealand is their want for contact. Their want to put it on the line. Not, that's the wrong way to phrase it. The want for contact. The want for that in-your-face combat within the rules. That's what's growing in New Zealand as well as their skill level. We are not a small team. This is just a fable. People say to make themselves sound smart. There's a lot going on in the green jersey and the blue jersey. We just need, okay, the players need a holiday and reset, but we need to continue the process of building, which is what's happening now. And then the next time we get into a knockout game of rugby, exercise all of these demons, fit the plan to the team, play to the plan, trust yourselves, trust everyone, but show up, whistle, ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's no. You're right. No, just to finish a couple of points on the on what Saracens did to us, and then we'll move on to the season as a whole. The scrums. There were two things about the scrums. First, there was the sheer amount of scrums Saracens had. The interesting was we had 4. We won them all. They had 13 on the day, which is amazing. And once they got that nudge, if just even if that stat went the other way, just by the way the infractions happened on the day, that stat won the other day, that would have changed the game. But also, like you say, how they use the scrum. There's shenanigans going in the front row. I used to play prop. I know the stuff that goes on. I was never the one doing them. I was a good boy. Everyone else was doing it to me. But there was all that going on. But it was the shadow of Billy V, I think, was a big factor in that their big, I think one of their biggest game plans was that how they didn't use them. They didn't use them. They're known for him picking the ball off the base of the scrum and running at you or joining the line and getting using the crash ball. He wasn't doing that for the most part. He did have some carries, but off the scrums, he would keep the ball in. But the Leinster flankers don't know that, so they're not going to push. We never got an 8-man shove. So you've got that element to it. That helped, and that was smart, right? And then you had for the one try. Remember, they only got one try on the day, and in that one try, it was a big block from Billy V himself when all the Leinster defenders are looking for him to carry the ball. Instead, he just ran straight at Will Connors through a blocking line. That was nothing wrong with that. It was a good line. It took him out, and it let Good through for the try. So it was very clever use of him by not using him, if you know what I mean. It was clever on that part. But again, it was how we reacted to that. We've had a game plan ready to stop him. And I'm not, you know, and I think we did have a plan on our first set of carries before that interception in the first half. Did you see the way we were running at them? We were every carrier got the ball head down into the tackler. We were doing that a lot more with every single carry. That was our plan, and it was working really well until that interception. I don't think Luke McGrath had a good game. I think we changed when Gibson Park came on. I think he's been doing better since the break. And I know we didn't want to mention names, but do you know what I mean? But that particular thing. That incident, I've looked at it again and again and again. I took the blue goggles off and I looked at it, and I actually think the ball was out, but I don't know how Itoji saw it. I don't know how
Itoji... it's impossible for him to see it,
He must have gotten a call. So someone on the other side must have said the ball is out, which probably means McGrath shouldn't have fired the pass. But, You know what I mean? It was just those are the fine margins. And that's...
Yeah, as soon as you hear that, yeah.
You do that in a game against, no disrespect, but Munster, Ulster in the Pro 14 or anyone else in the Pro 14, a regular game that's not a big test level European quarterfinal, you'll get away with it. Mm. Like McGrath threw a couple of dodgy passes. Remember the first half? One of them skyrocketed into the air.
Yeah.
And you know, you'd get away with that. You'd forget about it after the match that he's in. You do it in this kind of game, you're punished. And that's just the kind of thing that went against. So that's just...
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was uncharacteristic stuff from massive leaders. And again, these things don't happen every week. These things don't happen every month. That was the one time in the last season in a blue jersey, every single, you know, uncharacteristic mistake happened in one 80-minute stretch. It's just so unfortunate.
And you could say those mistakes were imposed.
As we're talking, I'm actually... That's true. But I do think there's enough in the team. There's enough, you know, in terms of, you know, Leroy D, in terms of leadership, in terms of everything. There's enough there to navigate it. I don't, like, you know, there are clubs who would murder for our coaching ticket. There are clubs that would murder for the squad that's there and how it's all working. So I think everyone needs to just relax a little bit. Look, we're all good at it. Everyone is good at it. But no one is more good at it than the players and the coaching ticket and all those guys. There's no one more good at than that. No matter how much, you know, we like to think that it's us, they are the most upset. And kind of reaching out to a few of the players over the weekend just to make sure they're okay. Everyone makes efforts to write back and say thanks for checking in and all this sort of stuff. But the mistakes that were made are uncharacteristic. But I do think the biggest thing that we need to look at in terms of Irish rugby in general, and we can lump all the provinces in and we can lump the green jersey in, is between the ears just before the first whistle. I do believe we are a little bit too relaxed and not relying on systems and trusting in systems and forgetting that the game revolves around contact. And if we, you know, the skills are there and there's no doubt about that. But if we forget the fact that it's a team-based combat sport, if we forget the combat and the combat sport, we're going to get rolled over. And by the time we get our heads into the game, you know, Northampton only happens once or twice. And Northampton are a very different, even back then, were a very different team to Saracens now. So we can't allow that to happen. And I think that's the big thing to take away. And I think that's the big thing that the guys would have known kind of last week in the lead up, going, we have to start up at the kind of 95, 98%. We have to get the first collision in. It's like any level. You get the first tackle in and the rest of their team looks around and goes, gee, Mac, I wasn't expecting, you know, Mako or whoever to get pushed back. And there it is. There they are doing it. You know what I mean? Mm. And I think that's the thing that's going to sit with them for a while. And I do think it's important to get everything, you know, get everything back on track, get everyone calm, and just roll into this Pro 14 season and play it as if it's your last Pro 14 season.
Definitely. And so talking about the players and the coaches and stuff, and so how do we as fans take what happened on Saturday and just try to define what was the season as a whole? It was, to say it was an unusual season is an understatement. Mm. You had the big gap in the middle of it. You had the no crowds at the end. You had all this going on, but you still have to take it. It's still going to go down in history as the 2019-2020 season. So how would you characterize that? Because there was a lot more positives than the one negative at the end on the one hand, but on the other hand, Leinster are about that fifth star. So it was whether we did or we didn't get it. So how would you sort that out?
Yeah, well, you know, a perfect season in any sport, it doesn't happen. You know what I mean? And it's especially in a league campaign, week in, week out, whether it's sleeting down in November or sunny in May, it doesn't happen. I don't know, you're a football guy, you're a Tottenham guy. I don't know if Tottenham have ever had a perfect season. And that's not me picking on Tottenham. I just don't know. I only know I think there was one Arsenal team who did it in the last 20 years. Mm. I don't think Liverpool have ever done it. They were my team when I was younger. So you got to look at this. Leinster went through a league campaign against, and they had the biggest target on their back this year. They had the biggest pressure because they were feeding the Ireland setup, and they had the most pressure in terms of their organization had to deliver in terms of conveyor belts of players, not just any old players, but players that could step in. And they did that 25 games, 24, 25 games. And they weren't, I think there was only, I only remember there's two or three games that we were lucky in, and that happens over a season. That's fine. But every other game was won. And that is something that no other team is going to do for a long time. So there's, the positives are there. You look at the players who have come through, the players who took the field on the squad on Saturday are all a product of that season, of that environment. And look, that end of things is beyond positive. Nothing feeds you like heartbreak, whether it's life, whether it's sport. Nothing feeds you. If they were to win the last three finals or last three out of four, whatever it is. If we had six stars, seven stars, it'd be a different vibe. But they've got to drink this in and understand that yes, the product is fantastic. The season was consistently fantastic. But let's not forget that the work is not over, and that keeps them hungry. You look at the players who came on in the second half on Saturday. You look at the players who stepped in while the lads were on Six Nations duty last year, even though it feels like 100 years ago. You look at the job they did, and it's just an absolute, amazing showing of what Stuart and Leo have done out there, what they've been allowed to do by the Blazers, who have stayed out of the way, which I applaud, because you know Ulster had issues with that a few years ago until they cleared their decks. And I think you can't look at this season anything other than a success. Yes, we want five stars. We want our merchandise to be updated. We get all that, but you can't have a season and have it defined by one game, because then it completely ruins everyone else's work. So it's been a massive success in the blue jersey, and I think we've got to wallow a little bit, drink in this heartbreak a little bit, but you've got to use it. You've got to use this going forward. Go for another perfect season. Send another perfect message. Perform a level higher. Whenever the pressure's on, you start ready to rock and roll. And there won't be a team who'll be able to handle
it. Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely more positives than just the one negative at the end. But of course, you know, the negative does, it's still kind of ringing in the ears for us both, I guess. Yeah. And we'll look at it more practically, probably in the long term. But like you say, with the new season is just like a few weeks away. So we'll be right back into it. And then, like, instantly, we won't have the Six Nations players. They'll be taken away. They're playing. Mm. They've got a couple of Six Nations matches. They've got this Autumn Cup thingy, whatever it is, towards the end of the year. So we won't really get to see the full proper Leinster team probably until the new year. And fingers crossed, by then we might be able to go actually watch them. I wouldn't hold out a whole lot of hope the way things are going, but that'd be good as well. But no, definitely, there's definitely more positives than negatives. Going forward, who do you fancy for the rest of this Champions Cup anyway, of the four teams left?
I don't know. I kind of, now that Saracens have put up that middle finger, they're still the most unlikable team in, not one of the most unlikable teams in sport, any sport. But if they were to beat us and win, I wouldn't be most uncomfortable with that, because that feeds the blue heartbreak a little bit more for the next time we see them. I do think they're a good shed if they can keep their win, because as you said earlier on, there were moments when the Leinster comeback was in progress and they were running out of steam. And there was moments of magic that brought them back, got that adrenaline going again. Now, if they don't find that piece of magic, they won't have the wind to get through that 80 minutes if they what they were doing. But I would, you know what I mean? I would be massively angry to see them win. I'd love to see Dunnick O'Ryan get a medal. Mm. I think he is he's a guy who's been shafted a wee bit by us or the green jersey. I think he is a magic player. I think he is an amazing player, and he was an awful nuisance again over the weekend for Racing. I just don't think they have that sticky order to get in the gutters with Saracens. But that's going to be some scrap as well. But yeah, I think it's going to be Saracens.
Okay. I'm not so much making a prediction myself. I think I'm just more, it's who I'm rooting for. And I think I've decided between Racing and Exeter, just because they haven't won it yet. And it'd be good if one of them could get it, and just and I suppose there might be a bit of Sarri's bitterness thrown in there as well. The whole thing, like I had a Sarri's fan on the pod last week, and she's been mad into Saracens for years, and she knew all the players and left, right, and center. And you know, whatever animosity we might have towards them, as fans, we have to appreciate what it's like for a fan of a team that buys the season ticket, buys the jerseys, goes to all the games, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's, can you imagine what all that salary cap malarkey was like for them? I mean, we wouldn't even dream of that happening at Leinster. I mean, you look what happened just today with the president of Montpellier got hauled away and taken.
I couldn't believe that.
I mean, I can't see that happening to Mick Dawson anytime soon. You know, it's like, it's just inconceivable. To be hearing that stuff going on, but as far as Cyrus is concerned, any animosity towards them would be for the club itself, the people that run it, what they did. So I just don't think I it sounds sour grapes because they beat us, but I wouldn't have wanted them to win the trophy anyway, because just because what happened, it's like, it's just wrong that they're still in it, you know, that kind of way. It's kind of tainted. Now on the day, 23 against 23, they won fair and square, and you can analyze that match. But from a rugby standpoint, when they're caught for what they're doing, and then caught again, fielding an eligible player and all that stuff, it just didn't seem right. So I'll be shouting for Racing in the semis, and then either them or Exeter in the final. We'll see how that goes.
I'd forgotten about Exeter. Exeter, it'd be great if they could kill that demon as well and perform on the big stage as well. That'd be fantastic.
Definitely. Okay. Well, I think we pretty much exhausted all of that. Like you say, we want to put Saturday into the rearview mirror and think ahead. We've got a couple of weeks off now, and then we're, you know, have some Pro 14 rugby to talk about soon, and some Six Nations rugby as well. It's gonna be weird. The Pro 14 next season is going to start before last season's Six Nations. So we're going to be in a kind of a time loop for a few weeks at the end of the month. So we'll see how that goes. But, you know, we're going
back to the future.
That's it.
We're going back to the future.
That they're still in with a shout for the Six Nations, so we can't forget that. We'll just see how they're able to hit the ground running. They won't have any warm-up matches. They're just going to go straight out there and play those. So that'll be but, I mean, you could be cynical and say the Italy match could be a warm-up match for going to Paris, and so, you know, if he can get a good team together, a good fit team together, and get them playing, you never know. So that's all that to look forward to. So it's not all bad.
Oh, absolutely! I can't wait to get that green jersey on again. It's been feeling like a long time since we did that, but I think it'll be interesting to see now, because Farrell was always a guy who played bravely / stupidly in league and all that sort of stuff. So maybe he sees what happened last weekend as a way of galvanizing the team and getting them wound up ahead of finishing the Six Nations and going into that November tournament. You know, we're playing England again in there. So look, it's out of the frying pan and into the bonfire. You know what I mean? And we have to do it. We can't let England walk over us again. And that's not kind of 800 years of oppression talking, that's 20 years of rugby talking. So, you know, but that's a conversation for another day. Again, it's another thing to get excited about. And the whole calendar is weird. You know, I don't know what month it is, because we've got the Irish Open Golf is this week. and then we've got our Six Nations in November. I don't know where I am.
That's it. And talking about Andy Farrell, I mean, he'll never say it publicly, but I won't say he's complaining too much that Leinster don't have two more big matches in the next couple of weeks. Mm. I'd say that was kind of nice for him. You know, it's that's not much consolation for us, but I'm sure that entered his head. Anyway, listen, we'll leave it there, man. Thanks a million for coming on, and we'll get you on again soon. We're going to be banging on about the Supreme Court of the USA later in the week. Slight change of topic, but I'll put a link to that in the program notes. And if you want to check out that pod. So listen, thanks for coming on, man. You're on couchpunditireland.com, are you not?
Absolutely. That is my online home. Well, my free one. The other one is behind a paywall that we won't talk about. But no, I feel much better now after going over Saturday and kind of getting that out in the open. I actually feel I'll sleep tonight. So thank you very much for that.
No problem. Always a pleasure. Okay. Thanks, man. We'll have you on again soon.
Cheers.
Take it easy.
Thanks for sticking with us right to the end. And thanks again to Keogh for the chat. There's an A interprovincial between Leinster and Ulster at the RDS on Friday. If it gets streamed live, we'll be making that the focus of our weekend coverage. Otherwise, we'll probably start scaling things back until the end of the month. We'll still have features like Front 5 every morning and Rugby on TV every Thursday, among other things. So be sure to keep in touch by checking in with the website harpinonrugby.net, Twitter @harpinonrugby, as well as our Facebook page. Until next time, stay safe, everyone. Slán.